The University Tower Chimes bring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. I have a choice of many different people who are chewing on cookies right now, and it's not the best time for introductions. But we'll start to my left, the man of many different kinds of colors of collared shirts. It's Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
I think you were lime green last week, and now it's kind of a...
Was I? I don't know.
I just go by mustard.
I go by what's clean.
Oh.
So if it's not standing up in the corner, I will wear it.
But at this dark morning time of year, like, how do you know if it's clean or not?
I don't.
The sniff test?
Yeah, sniff and the crunchy test.
The crunchy test.
If it's not crusty, I'll wear it.
So I know. You know, I'm just telling you, three little boys at home, the crust factor is real. That's all I've got to say. Like, those shorts are literally standing on their own, and you don't need to wear them again.
Well, as long as your kids don't have to chase them down, that's all.
Yes, that is true.
As long as they're not moving of their own volition, it's all good.
Continuing around the table, Dan Maggio has a quizzical look on his face.
Is it because they're shorts or because they're jean shorts?
Apparently, jorts are on the outs, as you see Mara kind of...
Fashion faux pas.
Fashion faux pas.
They are a fashion faux pas. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How are things, Dan?
Good. Long week. Grateful to be here.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're glad to have you here.
Fall is here.
In your special polo.
You always have the coolest looking polos.
You're like talking to these pre-dental students that we have around here where they're doing these video interviews more and more and more. And we're like, you probably don't want to do this in your bedroom. You probably want to wear clothing, you know, things like that.
At least from the waist up.
At least from the waist up, yes.
Make sure that your stack of clean clothes from the night before's laundry isn't sitting on your dresser.
Or on the webcam, you know? I mean, what can I say? Oh my gosh. Continuing around the table, we're very happy to have back after a very, very short hiatus. It's Professor Jeff Boats from Mathematics.
I must have made a wrong turn in Albuquerque or something.
You're actually in the middle of a fun run? Is that what I heard?
Well, just exercise, you know, hitting the gym.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, the weather is like cool enough that it's actually nice to do a run today without like sweating like crazy. So what classes are you teaching this semester, Jeff?
Oh, a lot of online stuff. Online algebra.
Really?
For mostly the nurses and the liberal arts students. And Calc 1. For the first time in a while, I get to teach Calc 1 again. Because I was chair of the department for about 9 years. And you make everybody else happy, schedule-wise, and teach what's left, you know?
So, yeah, sure. That makes sense.
Now, Laz Kikas has taken over the thorny crown of math, and I get to be a regular old prof again. I'm really enjoying it.
That's right. I think I saw a spring in your step as you came into the room. You seemed a little lighter on your feet.
Oh, yeah.
Good. That's a good feeling. Good to hear as a new chair myself. About 9 years from now, I will have a spring back in my step. To complete our circuit around the table, Professor Mara Livesey is here from Chemistry and Biochemistry.
Hello.
Hello. So you survived giving your first exam.
I sure did, and so did my students.
Yes. I'm trying to channel my Disney Aladdin. So how did it go? You don't have to answer that question. I think we've already talked about it.
Yeah, it went better than I had hoped. So to me, that's a big win.
Big thumbs up.
Yeah. So what were the expectations, though? Yeah. Survival rates, attrition, or...
No, zero deaths.
Zero deaths.
Okay, that's
and
a good one.
And an average that's about 10 points higher than where I started a year ago.
Wow. So. Well, that's good. That's good. It's a big step forward. Here we are. I can't even believe what I'm about to say. End of week 5, which means we are clearly a third of the way through the semester. And that's bananas, if you ask me, but... Time marches on, just like this program, where you can send us questions regarding anything. And if you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can find us on Facebook or listen to your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. So we were given a set of questions by our now, executive producer emerita, Professor Vivian Dix, who has since retired from University of Detroit Mercy. These are pretty cool. They're all based on her reading of the New York Times in recent months. So they're kind of all over the place and should be good to chew on for a while. Name the park that experienced the hottest temperature ever recorded on Earth, and can you identify the temperature in Fahrenheit?
Death Valley?
Death Valley?
It's
is that
Death Valley, California. Yeah, absolutely. But what was the temperature?
127.
Oh, more. 130 something, probably.
What were you saying, Jeff?
130 something at least.
It is. It's 134 degrees Fahrenheit. That's. I'm just going to call that hot.
No, thanks.
But it's a dry heat.
Well, definitely it is. In Death
Valley. Your whole body is desiccated.
Yes, exactly. You start shrinking.
Oh, and I lived in El Paso for a couple of years. It really is comfortable, honestly. I mean, 115 degrees, but if you drink a lot of water and stay out of the sun, it's actually very pleasant.
It's like a big sauna, right?
Yeah. Like an Arizona dry room, one of those, you know? Well, yeah. So that's why they call it that, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just thinking of Professor Nizar Ibrahim in our biology department is a new professor, and he actually took his research group to the Sahara this summer to get some dinosaur bones out of the earth. Mm. And they were talking about how they were either drinking water or eating watermelon constantly. It's the only way to stay hydrated. What is the best national park? I'm seeing a trend. To watch grizzly bears.
Something in Alaska, I would think.
It is absolutely Kodiak. Alaska.
What's that one? Not Kodiak.
It even starts with a K, but it's not Kodiak. If only Mary Lou Caspers were here. She knows all the national parks. You can find grizzlies in all 8 of Alaska's national parks, but this is the one for best grizzly bear.
I don't know.
What's
watching?
Oh, what's the...
I'm trying Kodiak? To think of a way. Kodiak is a good guess. Dan thought of that too. But it says Katmai National Park. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming using the native language of the Inuit. But I think the bottom line is that I'm not that into watching grizzly bears. There was a nice little internet video this week of two just fighting with each other. And that's good. I can watch that from my computer.
From afar.
Yes, exactly. Oh, my gosh. Name one of the 4 parks in the lower 48 where you can find grizzly bears by the name of the park.
Yellowstone.
Yeah, so I'm giving you credit for that.
What else?
Can you name one more for bonus?
Like Washington, probably?
Yeah, I was thinking, what else? You know, where's Heather when we need her?
Like Olympic National Park?
Yeah. No, not Olympic. No. There's one that's known because there's a giant piece of ice in the middle of it.
Glacier.
Ah, good call.
And the other ones are the North Cascades. That's New York, right?
I don't know.
And
sure. If you say so.
And the Grand Tetons. Tetons. If you prefer watching black bears, which states could have parks to accommodate you? Maybe not all of them, maybe one or two. Which states would you watch black bears? There's an obvious one here because we have a state university with the nickname the Black Bears. And I just assumed you guys would know it.
Nope.
Okay.
I would have guessed West Virginia.
Now I feel bad about myself.
I was thinking like North Carolina.
I'm giving partial credit for West Virginia. I do have Virginia, Shenandoah, which is one of Mary Lou Casper's favorite hangouts. But let's see if we can do another one. You guys don't know the University of Blank Black Bears, huh?
No.
It's worth a shot.
Thanks for rubbing it in.
Yeah.
Meanie.
Please send us your college mascot trivia questions.
Careful. We've had too many of those.
If it's in the Virginia area.
It doesn't. We grab Virginia.
Right, but is it the Black Bear University in the Virginia area?
It is not. The name of the park where you can watch black bears in the state they're asking for the response to is called Acadia. Do you know where Acadia is?
Oh, is that Maine?
Oh, that's Maine.
Okay, I was just going to go there.
Maine. And Nova Scotia, too.
So there's a couple others where black bears hang out. One is in, let's see if I give you the state, which of course giving away the response, but can you guess the park name? Okay. There's one in Florida.
Everglades
has black bears. There's one in Minnesota named after the explorers of the Great Lakes.
Cadillac? No. Who am I thinking of?
Actually,
Lewis
in
and Clark?
General, the explorers of the Great Lakes were known as the... It's worth a
Lost
shot.
Lost Tribe?
The Voyageur.
Okay.
And one in California. The one with the big trees.
Redwood.
Sequoia.
Sequoia. Oh, Sequoia is the name of the park. Yes. Pretty good. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. Alaska and California each have more parks than any other state. 8 each. That's a lot. Alaska, however, is one park that's so remote that you have to be flown in. And they can't land. They have to drop you off.
Isn't that true of almost any place in Alaska?
Presumably, they will also return to retrieve you.
With any luck.
What's next?
Name the park. I'm not sure you're going to be able to get this one, but I'll see if I can walk you through it. So, it's so remote. Think of Alaska. Here we are looking at our map. It's very, very far north, and it's almost like it's welcoming you to the extreme north.
The North Pole.
I'm gonna call it MacGyver Park because I think there were about 10 episodes of MacGyver like that.
The gateway to the Arctic.
It's called the Gates of the Arctic. Nice. Wow. Look at that. Right off the top. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, the Gates of the Arctic. That's what it's called. That's from Parade Magazine, 24 of June. And I love that you have to be flown in and dropped off. Presumably, they will come back to get you. If they have to, like, parachute you in, how are you getting back? Like,
maybe you tail hook climb down a rope.
Oh, my gosh. No, that's incredible.
Is it a bush pilot? I mean,
they drag the rope. Chopper
on a ladder, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or it's probably something that you, like, link onto.
Yeah.
Like in the movies.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, you know, Santa Claus landing on the roof sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not exactly a park, per se, but perhaps the panel can name the first and only agricultural preserve of the United States. Well, see if we can narrow this down, huh?
Like the Everglades again?
Not the Everglades. No, it's quite a bit further west.
Agricultural preserve? I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
There's only one of them.
Oh, no. Would this be something like in the Southwest? Preserve like saguaro cactus or something?
I think you need to go a little further north and west.
Utah, Nevada?
Keep going west.
California.
It's in California.
Okay.
It is.
The Redwoods,
you want more than the state?
It's yes, they wanted the name of the preserve. How about it? I'm trying to make sure I get this absolutely
agave
right.
Agave preserve.
Paul Giamatti movie, Sideways.
Yes.
They were taking a tour of.
Oh. Was it a winery?
Napa Valley
Agricultural Preserve. Yeah, that's where the wineries are. Absolutely. I'm glad people know Paul Giamatti. That's great. That's fantastic.
Or Mara just knows her wines.
So I see the movie.
That was a good movie.
Let's switch gears as I go into a question that starts with, the soap opera One Life to Live debuted in 1968 and was broadcast almost every weekday for 40 years. The actress Erica Slezak played the character Victoria Lord in over 2,000 episodes of the show. How many Daytime Emmy Awards or Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series did Erica win?
Did she finally get one? I can't remember.
That's like the Susan Lucci thing, right?
Is not that. This is not that. It's a little bit more than one.
So she's the one who won it every year.
It's somewhere in between winning every year and two. That's the best I can do right now.
10.
15.
12.
Have to do with
the
parts.
Only thing that's missing.
High five.
I told you it was a melange. We've moved on to the multi-part soap opera question. She won 6.
Oh.
For the record, it was a record for female performers in Daytime Emmys.
It's a record that anybody gets an acting performance for soap operas.
Soap operas used to be something that I would just watch and laugh at. It was very entertaining, and now they don't even exist anymore. Well, so it's just kind of sad.
Everything has to come to an end.
How many major U.S. tennis clubs still have grass on their playable courts?
U.S.?
U.S.
What's that one in upstate New York?
Oh, yeah, not the Meadowlands. I always say the Meadowlands. No, I know what you're referring to.
Where the U.S. Open?
Yeah, where is the U.S. Open played?
In Flushing.
Flushing.
Flushing Meadows. That's what it is. But I don't have anything beyond a number. How many U.S. tennis clubs have grass courts?
I would say 3.
6.
I was going to say 2, so...
I usually say, where's Kendra?
I'll say 2.5.
Fix a number.
Don't do the Kendra thing and go in the middle.
Wrong order of magnitude. So we're going to count that one as a loss. That's 14 total U.S. tennis clubs still have grass courts. Well, what's the deal? Wimbledon is clay?
No,
that's the grass.
Is grass.
French is clay.
Mm-hmm.
French. What's Australian then?
I don't know.
That's hard court like the one in New York. Yeah.
Okay.
There's 2 hard courts, yeah.
There's only one remaining major grass court tennis tournament in the United States. In what city and state is it held?
Flushing Meadow.
No. I'm wondering whether that's turf or something different.
Oh, you said grass? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you said
grass. Major grass court tournament in the states. What city and state?
I'm trying to remember where grass is legal again. Let's see.
Michigan's the 13th state.
There you go.
It's quite a bit far east.
Like Massachusetts?
It's in the New England area.
Delaware.
Connecticut, Rhode Island.
Maine.
It's in Vermont. It's Newport, Rhode Island.
Newport, Rhode Island.
Dan just runs down.
It's by territory, so I know pretty well.
Technically, Norfolk has more gross tonnage. Okay, here we go. Before an NFL franchise can relocate, What fraction of the league's teams must consent this? This is a pretty cool question.
Two-thirds.
No.
I'm going to say three-quarters.
Three-quarters is what it says here. 75%.
So Art Modell, Hornswive, and all those other guys.
No comment.
So I don't follow football very much, but who snuck out in the middle of the night?
Who
wasn't
did?
Wasn't the Baltimore Colts?
Antonio Brown, I think that was, right?
No. What franchise actually moved? Was it the Browns to the Baltimore?
Right.
There's that.
Browns went to Baltimore to become the Ravens, but then the Browns were reinstated.
Didn't they sort of sneak out in the middle of the night?
Proverbially,
I suppose.
Were they approved three-quarters to do that?
It must
have been. A good question.
But then what about, was it the Chargers did that too?
Well, and let's be serious here. I don't think that there's like a ballot box in the locker room. I think that it means three-quarters of ownership.
Right.
Yeah. I think that they did a secret ballot vote and then...
They
snuck out in the middle of the night. We are going to sneak out for a quick break. And we're back with some great questions from our executive producer emerita, Professor Vivian Dix. I hope she is doing well and enjoying this beautiful fall weather right now. Of the 1,200 plants native to Hawaii, what percentage of them exist only on the islands of Hawaii and nowhere else on the planet Earth?
Wow.
What percentage of the 1,200
plants? Pretty high. Okay.
50.
I would say 90.
It's 90%.
What?
Only there. It's weird. Man, and it's also weird that you know that. Off the top.
Dan, you have become 90%. Our Alaska and Hawaii ringer.
Yeah, he is.
He's never been to either place.
It's okay. You're doing fine.
Really?
Keep this up.
But I'll go if you want me to do some research.
You've never been to the Freak States? See how they're down there in the corner?
The Freak States.
Funny.
I would love to go to Alaska.
There goes our Alaska listenership, right?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, man.
The Simpsons won a trip once, and the company's like, just pick some place to go in the contiguous 48 because we don't cover Alaska and Hawaii, the Freak States. That's what it said on the ticket. William Clay Ford Jr., Ford's executive chairman and great-grandson, of course, of Henry Ford, has a favorite among the line of Ford cars. What is it, and how many versions of it does he have in his private collection?
Lincoln Continental?
It's not a Continental.
A Model T?
It's more a little obvious.
Edsel?
Mustang? Oh. It's a Mustang.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Edsel. I was waiting for someone to say, like, Aerostar.
The Escort LX.
A Topaz.
Oh.
In white. No, it's a Mustang, but he has how many versions of it? Because this is a little bit over the top to be a car collector.
32.
It's 20.
One every year.
20 different
I figured he'd have one for every year that they made. Didn't they start in 65 or 67?
67.
Yeah. Yep. But then there's also different models and all that.
Yeah.
I'm so not a car guy, I had no idea there were different Stangs. When someone asks me what kind of car I drive, I say black.
Didn't you drive, Vlad for the longest time?
Vlad the Impala.
Impala. That's right.
I remember that.
I just saw this joke on Reddit this morning because they were like... I thought of you, actually, Mara. I was like, dog owners, what do you have there? Oh, he's like 20% Labradoodle and da-da-da. Cat owners, what do you have there? Orange. No one really cares about anything beyond the species, you know?
No, but the cool thing about the Mustang is it's one of the few Ford cars that doesn't have the Ford badge on it.
Sometimes it has the pony, sometimes it has the Ford. But it's been a while since the 80s since they had the Ford badge on it. For many years, before phones could tell us what time it is, people wore wristwatches.
What?
That's
Vivian,
rude.
We love you and we miss you so much. Some of us still do, in fact. They were offered a wide range of prices from the reasonable, like the Timex, takes a licking, keeps on ticking, to those in the six-figure category. Some people even view the wristwatch as an investment. What two brands dominate the investment watch market? And we are not looking for Shinola.
No.
Rolex.
Patek.
Rolex is one of them.
Omega.
And Patek. Yes. Patek Philippe is the other one. Yeah.
Patek?
Yeah, Patek. P-A-T-E-K.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Patek Philippe. Now, are you familiar with the Patek brand?
You do know.
Can you roll up your sleeve?
You do know Shinola is made at the college.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I understand. There's nothing wrong with Shinola.
No.
It's just, you know. As far as we know, there's nothing wrong with Shinola. What is the price range for a Rolex? You should be able to provide both the low and the high within $1,000 for the price range for
a regular $2,000.
Rolex. $5,000 to $1,000,000.
So it's actually $6,000 for the low end Rolex.
Okay. Mind you, I've got three students who work for Rolex right now, too.
Wow, that's crazy.
So, and they
do design?
They get free samples?
Yes. we wish.
Yeah, they'll tell you what time it is anytime you ask.
Too high.
A million is a little bit too high.
Quarter million?
$40,000 or something.
I'm going to give a quarter million. It's $300,000 for the most expensive Rolex that you can buy.
It comes with its own arm.
Yeah.
Here, you get the arm with it too.
You press a button on the side, and then your doorbell rings, and someone comes to wind it for you. I just love the tongue in cheek here. For many years, before phones could tell us what time.
Do you guys remember like dialing 472-1212?
Oh, sure, of course.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
What was that one?
We used to do that on midnight for New Year's Eve.
So it could tell you the time.
Yeah.
You could also call a number and it would ring the phone back.
Yeah.
You should do it, mate. Yeah. Do you remember what number that was?
How
do you
do that? I remember Star 69ing people.
Yeah, this is Star 67.
This was a whole other generation before Star 69.
Sorry.
Oh.
When you had to dial Mabel and ask for an outside line?
How many of you remember party lines?
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah.
No?
Absolutely.
Not quite that old.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know what they are, but
we've heard about them, you know, like Sasquatch and Chupacabra. Exactly.
Used to be the thing.
At a recent Sotheby's auction in Geneva, a Rolex Daytona, which had developed a rare tropical dial, it had faded to a brownish color, was expected to bring in about $200,000 to $400,000. The person who bought it originally in the 70s paid less than $200, and a regular Daytona from that time would probably sell for about $150,000. For what price did this rare watch finally sell?
$1.7 million.
I'm going to give everybody else one more shot before I call that a win.
$23 million.
Okay. This is a faded Rolex. What was it?
$750,000.
$750,000 and?
All right, come on.
$5 million.
It's a $950,000. So closest without going over is Professor Boats.
Now I have to run up on stage and hug Bob Barker.
Right? Oh, yeah.
If he doesn't stand, you have to
take the $100 bill from my pocket.
Which pocket?
Oh, my. Okay. Perhaps some of the profs on the panel enjoy an occasional drink of wine, which they order by the glass or bottle. In England in 1497, however, wine was measured by the hogshead, by the pipe, and by the ton, T-O-N-N-E. How many gallons are in a hogshead?
See, typical hog.
I think I actually remember having to learn this in whatever grade that was.
Some measurement thing?
I grew up in the country and just, you know, bushels and pecks and all that, you know.
Did they make you figure out what a half dollar was, too? It's like, who's on the half dollar?
With Kennedy, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My kids come home, like, counting coins. I'm like, they don't know what they're teaching you a half. No, they're teaching them a half dollar. They've never even seen one. Anyway, I interrupted.
Oh, is it 20?
It's more.
No.
Well, then it's not a real hogshead.
It's not the size of a hogshead.
Oh. So I have nothing to base an estimate on.
Right.
No, I
more than 20, like, I think, is more than enough for you to work with.
But
50.
63 gallons in a hogshead.
How did you come up with that name?
It makes no sense.
How many hogsheads in a pipe?
I don't know pipe. I can tell you, though, that 63 gallons would weigh almost exactly 1,000 pounds, wouldn't it?
That sounds about right.
Was it like
500
pounds a gallon, right?
Okay, so that's actually a good jumping off point. How many hogsheads in a pipe if I tell you that a pipe is, you know, obviously bigger than a hogshead?
Well, 500 pounds in a hogshead. How about 1,000 pounds in a pipe? So is that, what, 127, 126?
So it's 2 hogsheads per pipe. So I'm thinking that they're going for a pipe.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then a ton is double that, right?
Right. So how many gallons in a ton is our last question?
252.
Yeah, 252. Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm not expecting to see this in the next Martha Stewart cookbook, am I? I mean...
I'm sorry, because this is the way I live my life. There is an episode of The Simpsons where Grandpa crotchetedly shakes his hand at the sky and says, "My car gets 40 rods to the hogshead." I can't get it out of my head because it's such a great unit of measurement.
Isn't it different than Old Man Burns answering the phone going, "Hoy, hoy"?
Ahoy, hoy. Traditional wine was stored in a barrel, then transferred to a carafe for serving at the table. Sometime in the 17th century, wine began to be stored in bottles. What discovery made that possible?
Cork? Cork?
Yeah, it's the cork. Right. 17th century? That's how long it took humanity? You, seriously?
I'll say that with a thumb.
It was then learned that wine lasted longer in tightly corked bottles and aged differently, developing the first bouquet. We have just enough time to take on our last wine-based question, and why the heck not? Perhaps it's crass to speak of wine in terms of cost, but let's do so anyway. If you wanted to purchase a bottle of 2009 Lafite Rothschild from Sherry Lehman in New York, how much would you expect to pay?
Per bottle?
Per bottle.
$1,000.
P.S. I hope that you would share it with the rest of the
people. Oh,
thank you. $500.
Yeah, I was going to say about $400.
It's more.
Oh.
More?
Yeah, $1,700.
I'll give it to you. It's basically $1,600. Wow. Yeah, $1,595. That's from the New York Times back in June.
I do. CCS also has one swanky wine auction, too. So.
Really? I can't imagine it's worth it.
We have a store of wine in the basement of one of the buildings that you would not believe.
That is freaky stuff. Freaky stuff. So, Jeff, baptism by fire. In more recent seasons, what we've done is we've come to the end of the show, and we end with one of the professors, it's you, asking us for to reveal one of our favorite things of anything, if you can come up with a category, and then we kind of go around the panel and talk about what our favorite whatever it is.
Favorite childhood cartoon.
Oh, my God.
Have you done that one before?
No. That's great. That's actually fantastic. I will go first and say it's a easy call for me with Scooby-Doo.
Ooh.
The end.
Okay. See, I'm torn. Because I also... Bullwinkle.
Of course.
The humor is always... Very adult.
Moric.
Well, also, but they also touched on some very intelligent things that I didn't discover until,
of course,
15 years later.
Yeah.
So,
like the Cold War.
Dan's nodding his head over.
Ah, Bugs Bunny. Looney Tunes.
Classic. Can't go wrong.
Yeah. Cannot beat him. Yeah.
Saturday morning.
Jeff, you have the ability to answer your own question.
Oh, okay. When I was really little, it would have been definitely Battle of the Planets, which was the American version of Gatchaman from Japan.
That's right.
And then I think when I got older, I liked the adventure stuff. Johnny Quest or...
Herculoids.
Les Mysterious Cités d'Or, The Mysterious Cities of Gold.
Mm-hmm, yep. Oh, yeah.
The English version was on Nickelodeon, I think.
That's right. I remember the theme song from that cartoon. Mara.
Uh-oh. No pressure whatsoever.
Why is it up? Oh, my gosh.
I'm probably going to have to go with Recess.
Oh, great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I always really enjoyed all the kids out at Recess, and I identified strongly with, I think her name was Gretchen,
mm-hmm.
the nerd.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid we've run out of time, and that's all the time we have for today, so it's time to say goodbye, Mara.
See you later.
Jeff.
Toodaloo.
Dan.
Goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.